history and what Beastars brings to the furry fandom and how it's impactful. Now, actually, while we're thinking of this, would you classify Beastars as fine art?
I mean, it's an expression of art.
We did a whole panel on the art of the furry visual novel.
I was there for that last night.
Yep. Did you like it? How bad were we?
It wasn't too bad.
Okay.
It wasn't quite what I was expecting. I'm going to just put it that way.
What were you expecting?
I didn't really know what I was expecting, to be honest, though.
But it
wasn't
bad.
Yes.
You know what he was, expecting?
You.
Oh, thank
you.
Gordon.
What?
You know what they were expecting?
What were they expecting?
Something else.
I know.
Stop pulling for you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have at least 5 more minutes until we start a wonderful panel here between all 4 of us, as we're just probably going to go down the line really quickly so we can do introductions and probably jump into this. I will start off. If you don't know who already I am, my name is Yellow. You probably already heard, you know this wonderful voice since yesterday and today.
Calling out the numbers?
Number 2248.
2813!
Here, yes. Do your job.
167.
I still remember my number.
Wait, I actually have a mic, yeah.
You feel better now?
I feel so much better. I'm not sure.
I'll say 3-digit number.
Like I was saying, my name is Yellow. I work here as one of the staff members here. I work primarily in registration. I've done this for the last 5 years. In Clinet, I love seeing everyone come back every single year. In Clinet, I know probably a lot of you are probably tired of hearing my voice. But I do apologize. You're probably going to listen in for the next hour with my wonderful other friends, who we started this last year together because of certain things. Well, not last year, but the year before. We wanted to do this for a very special reason, and of course that special reason is quite here. This wonderful person that is on the ground, who I'm going to hopefully ask to jump up really quickly. Oh, perfect. He's going to be our next one to speak.
I'm speaking? What am I speaking about?
We haven't started yet.
Yourself.
Yes.
Oh, we're starting?
No, we're not technically starting. We're introducing ourselves.
Hello. I'm Justin Tosh William. Many names. I am the tech guy. I love Beastars and some other stuff we do. Thank you.
All right.
Woo!
So, I actually have to go by 2 names. First, my name's Coiter. That is basically my full suit, and he is right here with me. I also go by Harry Belmont. I am a huge fan of Beastars. I came up with the idea, created the slides, dragged all 3 of these people over and saying, we're doing this, and guess what? We're doing it.
I'm very thankful you did that.
Yes, I'm glad. And now I'm going to introduce someone who actually inspired me to do the panel, and he didn't necessarily got me into it, but he increased my appreciation for the media and what the story represents.
Oh, thank you. Hi. So my name's Patrick, but in the furry community I go by Bren, but that's not a name that most people know me by. Back when I was a senior in high school, I read this cool manga called Beastars, and I wanted to make a little video about it to put up on YouTube to show my cousins. It was cool, I named it, so I read all of Beastars, and you know, I thought it was gonna get like a couple views. It got 600,000 views, and I was like, wait, what the heck? So I stuck with it, and I really liked Beastars, so I made a bunch of Beastars character analyses, if anyone's heard of my channel before. That's me. I'm the guy that just makes those Beastars videos that people know me as.
Shameless plug,
yeah, kind of is. I have a new video coming up next week. About the Beastars movie. Anyway.
We have to do Jonah.
Alright. Oh, alright.
Here's the.
Alright, thank you. Oh, yeah, give me a moment.
We still have
can you
1
write
minute.
Down one guest that is here, but he's not technically here.
Okay. Yeah, we can start.
Right. Oh, we can start?
Yeah, sure. That's
a minute.
Just start.
Oh, wait.
Early.
Just start early.
It is 1 minute.
Do it.
Oh, fine, we'll do it.
Yay,
press the button, pull the lever, Trump.
I have that lever.
I put the intro on the title screen, didn't play it.
It's fine, breathe. So, we already introduced ourselves. This backdrop is actually from the anime regarding the moon. We are going to be talking about the anime later. Though, everyone knows who the special guest is here. He actually was supposed to show up last year, but we decided to do a meme in his honor.
I do have it.
Yes. We had to start this way. We had to. We couldn't give it up. Actually, we still feel that right now. All right, let's get started.
Oh.
Yep. All right, then.
This will man in this field. Wait, this is my slide, isn't it?
Yes, it is. That's I handed it to you.
I thought you were handing it to Yellow. Hello. So, what is Kanto fandom? Why does it matter? So basically, canon 1N, non-exclusive, refers to a collection of rules or texts that are considered to be authoritative. This is the This is the literature definition. To a fandom, canon is a series, episode, or any media that the member of the fandom can say, can point to and say, that's it! That's what this whole thing is about! Examples of canon in various series fandoms include, but are not limited to, Trekkies, the main series first season, Star Wars, the movies typically episodes 4 to 6, anime, Dragon Ball Z, Naruto, Sailor Moon. But with furries, where do we begin, really, honestly?
It's so broad.
Tiny Toons.
So, I just compiled just a quick, brief history, because when it comes to the furry fandom canon, we don't have one. We really don't. There are things that people can say, oh, I got interested in because of this show, or I got interested in because of this book. So throughout the history, it's always been there. So I started back from 1950 to 1930 with the Funny Animals cartoon. And the guy, gentleman actually in the front, who did a panel of the older cartoons, which I'm glad he actually arrived.
Not so much that old, 40s on, but I know.
Right. So some of the top three. I know there's a lot more, but we want to highlight these would be Felix the Cat, Oswald and Mickey Mouse. Have any of you actually seen Felix the Cat? It is kind of old.
No!
Oh, we had a good bit. All right. That was one of my personal older favorites when I was growing up. And then we had the upward trend from 1930 to 1980. There was a lot that came out that year. We had the Hanna-Barbera collections. We had for more mature audience, Fritz the Cat. And then, of course, Disney's Robin Hood. That's just a poster child. It's not canon per se, but definitely furries can say, oh, yeah, it was Robin Hood. I saw it like 100 times. Then, right from 1980s going forward, there was just a full landslide, which I'm going to call the Disney and animation landslide. Mainly Disney. Yes, it is Disney's fault all the way. Lion King, we got DuckTales, and then you have me. And then some other ones. Sonic. If anyone's in the Sonic family, you know that's super big.
Triplets.
And some lesser known ones. Sherlock Hound. That's an anime series that I fell in love with. That was anthropomorphic dogs portraying Sherlock Hound. It's a really good series. And it's going to be coming out on Blu-ray. And then, of course, 2016, Zootopia. And then it just spirals. And I think that concludes there, as we're just continuing down the furry history.
Oh, do you have clippers?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Big chungus.
Just wanted to highlight a few of them. And usually, when it comes to the furry fandom, we do have the Disney canon, but we have a new canon that has been recently released.
It's weird because, 2019 to 2020 just, had a bunch of furry Netflix animes for, some reason. That being Agretzko, DNA, no way. Well, actually, Agretzko was that was 2018, but that I feel like that really started the whole, if you were a furry, you most likely saw at least one of these shows on Netflix, which there's obviously these stars on.
I really like this one. Get a hold of yourself, Karen. You're married. All right. This one's all you.
All right.
I can't read it.
So, yeah. Basically, this is parallel used with allegory. On the side, we have our boy, Moogie, which I'm soon. I'll click on it a little bit more. So, basically, allegory, writing explained. Allegory is basically a literary device that are symbolic in nature. Almost giving a really simple example for allegory. It's one character will not share with another character. Oh, it's an allegory for like maybe a message about greed or something like that. And then parallel, the Google dictionary for that is a noun, a person or a thing that is similar or analogous to another. And kind of around the same thing, basically drawing parallels through symbolism. That's really the key point we want to put there with it. And so, even though character problems may be more fantastical in a story, however, showcase of allegories for grounded and relatable issues can show up within more fantastical issues. You can find series that are, for example, medieval or set in a crazy sci-fi, but a struggle that a character can be dealing with could be something very relatable because it's within the confines of that story, and it makes it very clear that maybe some of those fantastical elements actually allude to something more real in our world.
All right, leading into that, over history, fantasy can be considered a genre or a particular type of medium that focuses on specific issues. Like the old-time allegories, think of them as just the talking animals, like you got Aesop's Fables back in 1484, the Grimm fairy tales of 1812, and then we got animation. So at one point, we went from using animals for allegory to just slapstick comedy humor. And then we got like Felix the Cat and Mickey Mouse. But over time, remember how we went to the Disney landslide? We returned to allegory by having shows that talk more about serious issues, like Animal Farm back in 1954, Watership Down, movie 1987. Now, question, has anyone in the room familiar with these two works, Animal Farm and Watership Down? Oh, yeah, we're furries. I don't need to talk about these two, because they are depressing.
Is this going to be Fritz the Cat?
Nerd!
Well, that could be. You can consider Fritz the Cat as a neo-allegory regarding the liberal movement back at the time.
Again. I have a small thing to say about Fritz the Cat real quick.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, with Fritz the Cat, I feel like that is, because it was a more adult type of show, it kind of also inspired a new wave, like not adult that way, but like mature, as in like people seeing like furry stuff, it's kind of not just like for kids. It inspired a lot of like more like mature stories like Watership Down to use, I would say, like, you know, anthro characters in a more serious setting. Also, it inspired someone I know named Fritz the Raccoon. He's been very inspired.
All right, and then now we come to today, which I call the neo-allegory, the true return to form where instead of just speaking about general lessons like, oh, I don't know, don't steal from people or be careful about what people tell you, like there's the crow and the raven for Aesop's Fables. The fox flatters the raven drops his food, fox eats the food, and the raven's taken advantage of, which the moral of the story is, don't just listen to everything you hear. And I say the best example of neo-allegory is Zootopia. I'm not sure if you can have to explain why, but it definitely parallels many of the prejudice lessons that we definitely still have problems with today, regretfully. Oh, and Beastars, which we're going to get into. There's a lot. Alright, so anime and the furry genre. So anime.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you know I'm bad at pronunciation.
Anime.
Alright, anime. So, when it comes to anime, it's a little bit different because Japan doesn't really use furry characters the same way that us in the West do. The West is kind of used to it because we do have the Looney Tunes. Like, it was a way for a medium to stand out. Like, okay, you can have a show with human characters and have it animated, but say if you had animal characters, say if you're talking to an individual, be like, oh, so what's your show about? Like, well, it's about these two kids. And, like, and then people are like, okay, and they're like, well, it's about the two kids, one's a dog and one's a cat. I'm like, oh, I know that one. It was just easier to separate your show from the mainstream. But Japan didn't really use this as a trope, and there's even a trope for this, where most writers are human. Since we're human, we write stories about ourselves, so why would we want to deviate from that? But those that break from the trope usually end up bringing something very unique to the table. And the older anime fairies was, now I'm going to see, I don't think any of you have watched this. Who has watched Kimba the White Lion?
Some of it.
We're furries.
Lioness.
Some of it back in the 70s.
We're furries.
I am impressed. I am so happy.
Kimba. Who's the great
son? All right, now this one is more of a
who's
story.
The one who brought
Fables
the jungle
of
fame?
The Green Forest. Has anyone watched this one?
No.
All right, this is a hidden gem where it was much came after Kimba the White Lion, but it was nowhere near as popular. But it was popular in Japan, but nowhere else. It was, think of it as Aesop's Fables, but still all animals, and all the animals were much more anthropomorphized. And of course, Sherlock Hound, which is one of my personal favorites.
Never heard of it.
And I also want to get into the difference between kimono mimi versus kimono.
Oh.
These are two Japanese terms that express the art style attributed to this type of mimi. Kimono is straight up furry. Kimono mimi, human character, all the only difference is that they got animal ears and animal tail. That's it. And Japan loves kimono mimi. And this is just a clear example. So Spice and Wolf, you got human girl, she's got the wolf tail, she's got the wolf ears, she's not furry. Then you got Sherlock Hound, which I actually have the title here of the Japanese DVD box, and you can clearly see they are fully anthropomorphized dogs. Actually, Yellow, when we did this panel before, you talked about how you had no idea what Sherlock Hound was.
Oh, I actually really did not at all. I thought he was playing a joke on me, by all means, about this actually being a real thing. Until he actually showed me the actual episode of it. I was blown away, and I thought I was really shocked. It is actually really good, and I cannot wait for it to come out when it actually hits Blu-ray.
Yes. All right, now we're going to start with the beginnings. Let's just check here. Yep.
So we're going to start this with the beginnings of Beastars. So, now, the beginnings of Beastars, which we get into the actual Beast Complex. Everyone's read the Beast Complex, correct? All of it? By some degree?
Oh, okay. We actually don't know that many people about the Beast Complex.
Oh, okay.
Extra ones.
Oh, we got one.
Okay. So, the Beast Complex is basically, you would say, in the anime world, as an OVA. They are side stories from the main story itself. These are actual stories that don't ever make it into the main because these are not considered like reasonable things to be listening to at all. Now, of course, the author created this, and I actually read some of the chapters, and the first one that you do read in the Beast Complex is a lion and a bat that meet each other.
Mm-hmm.
The point of the story is that don't always consider someone else to be in the same shoes as yourself than anything else. Now, we usually see multiple, so there's about, if I remember correctly, there's like over 22 chapters in all the books, and each one has its own story about a different pair of animals and their story of their lives that they do day to day. And I actually just finished this one itself, which is the camel and the wolf. He's a publisher, I'm not going to ruin any more than that, but it is also still the same thing that we go through the same thing, what he was saying earlier about the complex and then society frowning on different things and anything else.
So,
style, structure, world building. World building with Beastars, real quick, I want to say is, to be dicey, I like it, though. But with that, we got the style and art, and obviously, well, we're all here for this, Beastars is anthropomorphic. I'm sure that's a term that you guys heard of, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so, it's kind of just, the early art style of Beastars was very sketchy, and over time it got polished. It kind of seemed more realistically anthropomorphic, and then over time it became very more manga-like as it went on. And so the structure and titles.
These come from Beast Complex.
Oh,
yeah, I actually mentioned it.
It's yours?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'm sorry. So, as we continue with the overworld and anything else, these are some of them. So, again, Lion and the Bat, Camel and the Wolf,
Crocodile
and the Deer.
Which is my favorite.
I was not expecting a lot from what I was going to read from that title. And then, of course, it goes on and on and more. It is the world structure that we get to see that we don't really see in the main anime itself because we're only focusing on Legoshi and his world building of a story. but we at least get to see the world they're actually in, because it's hard to see what world is being created through a story, because it usually focuses on one thing, and that's it. So it does build on the same rules, just different stories, in Clannad.
Oh yeah.
The bonus chapter in chapter 6. I had to jump to it. And it's there. I like the book anyways.
Yep. So this one to me. Yeah. I'm gonna lead into the next one. So right when Beastars was coming, or when Power of Itagaki was in building this process, Zootopia came out, which he even alluded to. A certain great castle in a certain great country. And the fact that she had that little Easter egg, and I just wanted to share with all of you.
Right here. I
got it. You got it? Oh, now we get to talk about the author herself, Haru Itagaki. We stand this lady. This is her. This is how she always appears in public. She's honorary furry. Yes, she has a fursuit head. Yes, she wears it in public. Yes, she uses her fursuit head to help with insecurity dealing with large groups. Men are, I can relate to an extent. And yes, her persona is a chicken, and she's never done a face reveal. Never. At all. And she also has self-inserted a character into Beastars, which I will be going over that story, because it's one of my favorite short stories in the entire manga.
Moonlight State Sandwiches!
You will get to that, because there's some things you may not even know about the story that just makes it even more fascinating.
Actually,
we definitely stand this way.
I will say, egg sandwiches are really good.
Oh, they are. Actually, I'm partial to egg wraps.
Okay.
All right, so Haru Itagaki is a mangaka, which is a very, very special title in Japanese manga culture. So
it's basically what we give a title to a person who creates manga.
Yes, they create manga, but there's also a caveat. It breaks into the industry without becoming an assistant first. Normally when you start manga, you're hired by an actual manga artist. You're trained in the style, you develop your own stories, and then you branch away to create your own works. Haru's like, no, I'm just gonna do it. And she ends up exploding in popularity because of how influential her work was. And this is incredibly rare. And it's even rarer because she's the daughter of Kitsute Itagaki, the mangaka. Oh, you want to talk about this one?
Oh, no, I'm just saying it's pronounced Keisuke.
Oh, thank you for my bad pronunciation correction. And this individual wrote Baki the Grappler. Are any of you familiar with that manga?
Is that
okay?
Yeah.
So,
question.
Oh, yes?
Isn't the anime Baki on Netflix based off that manga?
I think so.
No, it is.
Oh, it is? Yes.
Wait, while we're doing this, it's perhaps OVA, not OVA.
Yeah.
Oh.
It literally stands for Original Video Animation, and like you read the actual transliteration of it, it's like, you know, with like lots of O's and U and B's.
I do apologize. Pronunciation is not my strong suit. Never was. Actually, if you ever play Magic the Gathering with me, I butcher the title of the cards all the time.
Dude, I'm really bad. I do it all the time.
Alright, but the fact that this is more rare is normally, if a son or daughter has a mangaka in the family, they would become the assistant to that creator. Power did not. She was not influenced by her, well, she was influenced by her father, but she never became her father's assistant. Based on her own documentary, her mother wasn't too thrilled with her even doing the comics. She did her comics herself. She self-published some of Beast Complex, which if you actually try to find the original Beast Complex that are in print, those are stupidly expensive.
Yeah.
Like, levels of, let's see, any type of old literature work. And she did an autobiography called Haru's Graffiti. It's a phenomenal autobiography that reveals so much about this character. And I actually have screenshots from the autobiography down here. And it might be small, so I want to read this out loud. I think my first crush was Scar from The Lion King.
Yeah.
She actually said this in her autobiography. If that's not furry, I don't know what is. Now, her life is very private. The only thing she really revealed about her life was in this autobiography, so I wasn't really to dive in that, but I do want, for anyone who is interested in this author, please respect her privacy. Just as a little footnote. Oh, and her favorite Beastars character is Gohan. So, any of you are familiar with Baki, and her saying that her favorite character is Gohan, I think you'd understand.
From Dragon Ball?
Alright, so now we're going to go...
Who's going?
Yep, I will take care of this one, man. So let's start with the manga. So Beastars was released back in 2016 with chapter 1. Now this was a serialized release since this was... Oh, actually we're going to go to the last chapter. It went to 196 on October 8th, 2020. This was serialized in Shonen Jump. So it wasn't, say, they created several chapters, then released the book, then it was translated, it came to the States. The process would be, Haruhi Tagaki would release a chapter on Shonen Jump. After a certain number of chapters are released, they would then convert it to a book and then sell it. That is normally how most manga from Shonen Jump become serialized. And it was originally released on Wednesdays, but due to popularity and how much of a hit this was, it was changed to Fridays. If you're familiar with the background, we're going to put a thumbtack on this. And the main plot, it's a Zootopia-style world where predators are inclined to eat prey. The best way to describe this, so I watched a movie called That's Entertainment, which is about old musicals, and all musicals can be summed up as this. Boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy sings song, boy gets girl back. Zootopia has this one. Yes, that's a musical.
Oh my god, yeah.
All right, so in this one, it's Wolf meets girl, Wolf about to eat girl, Wolf trains to respect girl, Wolf works to get girl back. Just wanted to convert that. Oh yes, and now it's meme time. I swear, I'm not a furry just because I like Beastars. Innocent leaves. And of course the question, of course not. Totally not a furry. Don't smile at me like that. You don't believe me, do you? This is ripped straight from... Oh, wait, what chapter?
Well, it's from chapter 1 to 54, but it's not ripped straight from it. That's actually a panel edit I did, but...
All right, next up?
I actually have a question about that meme.
Oh, yeah?
We have time, so... I've always been called a weeb by saying I like...
So, I've been called a weeb because I like the show, and I'm like... That's not the case, but okay. But can you not like anime and still like Beastars? That's my good question.
Of course.
You think you can?
Okay. Yes.
Cool.
But you are definitely not a weeb. You're just flat out a pervert.
Okay, well, you're not wrong there, but...
No, you're not. You're not. Don't worry. It's fine.
Definitely a furry.
Don't worry. It's both.
So this is the moment where we're just going to talk about why we love Beastars and what brought us into it. So with this manga, I discovered it around chapter 98. Yes?
Can you like Beastars without being a furry?
No.
Yeah. You could. Little asterisk there.
Asterisk.
I watched it with my boyfriend at the time and he became a furry.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to highlight this. Beastars is a gateway medium. Remember how we went back to canon? And we took some time to say, for a medium that someone like or gets into, they can point to something and say, this is why I like it. Beastars is one of those types of mediums where someone can point to and say, I like being a furry because I read Beastars. So you can start liking Beastars, but it's only a slippery slope until, oh my... What's this? Oh, wow.
Beastars turned me furry on the next Geraldo.
Yep. It's a slippery slope.
Don't make this a religion, then.
These conversions.
Well, we already have the Cult of the Lamb. We don't need anything else.
It's fun!
That's true. So, when I discovered Beastars, there were 98 chapters. I read the darn thing in 3 nights. I stayed up late. I was... horrified that I just binged it, but I loved it that much. And there's a YouTube video released by Sonic Ha XD where people were making comments. There was one person actually completed it up to chapter 142 in 4 hours.
What?
Someone made that comment because they loved it that much. And there was a competition in the comment video of how fast people were just binging this series.
Speedrunning?
Yes, they were speedrunning because they loved it that much. And I'll be honest, sometimes I reread some chapters. And my friend Vaughn, unfortunately, he got COVID, but I'm going to share his story. I got him into it. And since it was serialized, people in Japan would translate it and then release it on American servers. So I was hooked into it because I was reading Beastars during the pandemic, because let's be face it, what else are we gonna do? Read Beastars. And every time a chapter was released, I messaged the poor dog, he's a Shiba Inu, it's like, a new chapter of Beastars is out. And then we talk about it, and Paru Itagaki has this amazing talent as a writer to do cliffhanger after cliffhanger, every single chapter. She would just not stop. It would just keep going and going and going. And I'm just so happy that she did that, because there's always something to look forward to. All right, I'm done gushing over this series. I'm actually going to hand this over to the one that actually made the video on.
Yeah, so like, Beastars, I was chilling at drama practice. It was like the summer thing of it. And my friend Greg was like, hey, I want to get Popeyes. So I was like, yeah, who knew that Popeyes trip would change my life? So we go to Popeyes, and the Popeyes is right by like the mall. And we're at Barnes & Noble, and we see Beastars. And then as time, like, kind of, like, it's kind of, like, talking about being a furry, but I was, like, also not really even, like, admitting it to myself. So then my friend Greg was like, hey, Patrick, I bet you'd like this. I'm like, stop, no, no, I'm not going to read it.
Yeah.
So then a couple days later, I'm at work, and my friend Matt tells me that you could read manga online. I didn't know that. So he, like, links me to JoJo Part 6, and I read it, and I'm like, wait a second, if I can read JoJo online, can I read Beastars? So I go to visit Pace in New York City the next day, like, for college. The subway gets trapped underground, and it, like, gets stuck. So then I read, like, the first 20 chapters of Beastars, and I'm just, like, in the subway, and I'm like, wow, this is really fun. And, yeah, from there, I really wanted to talk about it. I made a video talking about it, and then I just, you know, like, started doing YouTube videos about the series. And it was a very, very fun time, and a fun experience interacting with the community. And there was just something very special about the way that Paru Itagaki wrote the characters. Admittedly, it's very strange, and not all of it translated the best into English, some of the wording, but the characters had so many layers and so much depth, and I loved the day-to-day style of the story. It felt like just like a kid who was going through high school. I grew up with Lugosi, basically, because when I first read it, I was 17. Then when I got to the point in the story that he turned 18, I coincidentally also turned 18 that day. And then when the story ended, he was 19, and I, like, was about to turn 19. It was crazy. So I, like, related to, like, the main character so much, because I was, like, going through the motions each week reading his story. And it was really cool. So I feel like, yeah, I really relate to Beastars.
Right. Actually, Yellow, I'd like you to talk about how you got into Beast Complex, because I know you really like that series.
Oh.
Yep.
So, one, I actually did not read the manga of Beastars. I know. Hate me. I'm sorry. I actually watched the anime instead that Netflix did, the NPLs, and I actually did have a link for season 2 to come out to complete it. Now, I did read Beast Complex more as the manga. One, they're not going to do it at all, because who knows. But two, I found side stories to be more exciting about world building and characters you don't really see, because it's more of a filler and more of, like, a great background than anything else. Granted, you already know all the background for main characters, but it was greater to see the city, how she actually built the city, how she built the characters, and how she built backgrounds for them in this world that is like you or me and anything else. We just keep on going by, but each of us have our own story passing each other than anything else. And it was great to see chapters considering two characters that were somewhat unrelated to each other because of either indifferences, similarities, or events that happened to themselves in their lives. And I found it more better to actually be connected to them, because I actually like those stories better than anything else.
And I was told by this one about this great show, and I'm like, oh, okay, you told me about a certain video game that we all like. So I'm like, well, how bad could it be? And this was when I was just starting to really pick up on the furry fandom. I'm like, you know, this isn't that bad. I read some of it online, but most of it I just purchased because I wanted to collect it. And then when the anime came out, I binged it in a day. Like, that was my thing. I was like, waiting until it came out on Netflix, and I was like, let's go! And I watched it the instant it came out, so, yeah.
And one last story. Because when I was reading Beastars, as I like to say, I read it before it was cool, before it became popular on YouTube. After I binged it for those 3 days, a few weeks later, this gentleman here released his video. I watched it, and I'm like, wow, he's a YouTuber. I bet he's super popular and is completely unapproachable. And then I ended up joining his Discord, and I messaged him saying, hey, we're doing a panel on Beastars, would like your feedback. Then he told me he lived in New Jersey, and I'm like, oh, do you want to help with this panel?
I was like, yeah, sure. I mean, like, I'm not like this big guy. I'm literally just some 19-year-old making videos in his mom's attic. So, yeah.
So then he's just been coming to Philadelphia ever since.
Yay.
Roll tape, next slide. Let's keep going.
There we go.
Oh, I'm going to be talking about this. So one of the reasons why I really like the Beastars manga is Paru's style. We already spoke, or Patrick spoke, about how her style was much more rigid and sketchy in the beginning, but over time it became much more clean-cut and more manga-like and more polished. But the sketches brought something through that drove home the expressions, as well as even the characteristics through the art style. I actually have two pictures here of Legoshi with Amin, and Legoshi, Lewis, and the Shishigumi. Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah.
I'm just pronunciation paranoid right now. And next slide.
This was very, very... Yes.
I'm giving this to Patrick.
Oh boy, here
we go. Wow.
Okay, so like last year I did this, and I promise you this is not scripted. I like just could do this from memory. I have worked on Beastars so much. I've read the manga through 11 times. Unfortunately, I can point out what chapter every single one of these screenshots is from. Alright, let's do this. Okay. This one's from chapter 173. This one's from chapter 154. This one is also from chapter 154. Let's see, chapter 53, ooh, I like that one, that's chapter 28, chapter 24 is a good one, that is from chapter 143, I love that panel, that one's pretty great, let's see, oh, I see, that is chapter 94 right there, oh, that's the Bill Egg chapter, I love that one, that is chapter 155, and then lastly right there, Legos of Being All Annoyed, that's chapter 63, let's go.
When we did this panel first, he rattled them off, and I was phenomenally amazed. I did not expect it.
I read this manga too much, oh my god.
Yes, you did. We all did. I need to read through it again, but not in 3 days. I think that was a little quick. I need to take smaller bites next time. But I just wanted to compile all these different expressions just to give you an idea of how from the early works, she really focuses on the eyes. Sometimes the eyes might be smaller just to give like a more surprised or like a derpy expression, while others, she would reflect the size of them to really bring life into the character. And it made me think, why was this striking to me? Why was I drawn in so much? And next slide.
Oh.
All right, try again.
You go ahead, Pat.
There, got it.
And when I was doing my research, I learned about how Paru Itagaki really liked Western animation. You'd think if she's living in Japan, she would watch more anime-style animations, but instead, she really liked Looney Tunes. She really liked Hanna-Barbera. And I started to notice a trend when I was looking at the expressions in Beastars, and hearing that, I'm like, oh, well, I watched Looney Tunes. And then I gave a hard look, and I'm like, wait a sec. Some of the expressions are actually pulled straight from some of the cartoons. And I wouldn't say this would be plagiarism, but this is more inspiration, because she definitely gave her a good spin on it. I want to highlight this one here. One of my favorite Looney Tunes, Wile E. Coyote in the corner. He kind of has like this look where he's got his arms out. And do you remember that one pose that either Lewis had on the prior slide and Legoshi had when I was showing you the first ones where the mic turned to turn the Xbox? It was very, very similar. The eye expressions, the pose, and it's just struck me, wow, no wonder it seemed familiar to me. So she took a Western style and converted it and made it more manga-like, which many of the early chapters definitely pull that Western animation, and it took something, transformed an art style, and made it more unique. if you take a Beastars manga and compare it to, say, a standard anime, like, I'm going to use Fullmetal Alchemist, or there are certain expressions and tropes that you always see in anime that you just expect it. You can basically turn it into a drinking game. Like, oh, the teardrop expression, because they're stressed out, or the blushy-blush expression. Like, oh, senpai noticed me. And you do see those in Beastars, but with the Western animation slant, it makes it completely unique.
Next slide.
Yes.
Oh my god, that's
cool. Oh, it's your take.
Oh my god, it's me. Hi. Again. So yeah, this was what I wrote a year ago, and I feel like then I had like even more Beastars stuff memorized because I made a lot less Beastars videos this year because I finally went off to college in person. But let's channel 19-year-old Patrick for a second. Let's see. So, why does
19-year-old Patrick
like Beastars? I love the relatable aspect of each of the characters and so much to interpret and how the stories relate to us and how we can learn from them to better ourselves. Now I remember what I was going with this. Beastars, the way it's written, is quite ambiguous with the characters. They never flat out say directly what they feel. It's all analogies and just vague expressions, meaning that you can heavily debate the meaning of some things. For example, there's a part where a character says that they are their first male friend. We don't know if that means boyfriend, we don't know if that means regular. There's a part where another character says basically how they have a disdain towards their father for a specific reason. Some people interpret it because of like an inferiority complex, while other people interpret it as maybe just a thing about not being related to them. It's really cool because Beastars is what you make of it. I've talked to people who have interpreted the story entirely different from me. I've had people write their college theses of my parents, like, in my comment sections about how they interpret the story entirely different, and I love that. I love that this story can be interpreted so much. You can't really do that with some other like shows. Like, I love Bleach, but like, I don't know, you can't really just like have like paragraphs on why this one character is interpreted one way. When I feel like, I don't know, Beastars goes a lot deeper into his characters than a lot of other anime I've seen has.
All right, I'm going to talk about this because this is my all-time favorite character, all of these stars. Behold, Legum!
Yeah!
All right, and I'm now going to talk about the story of Legum because it is one of my favorite stories. This is Power's persona, okay? She self-inserted her character in the most clever way possible. And like what Patrick said, there are theses of how this story is interpreted, which I'm going to go into a few of them, but the main parallel and allegory is just phenomenal in how it's written. So remember that one comment I made that I wanted to put a thumbtack regarding the manga changing its schedule from Wednesdays to Fridays? I want you to really think about that when I go through this story.
Okay.
First off, Haru really loves working on manga art. So, what does Legum love? She loves her work too. She likes eggs. She likes producing those eggs. She exercises every day to make sure her eggs are the highest quality. Because in the Beastars world, since it's a chicken, she takes her eggs, she sells them to the market, and then the market would turn them into egg sandwiches. But guess who likes her egg sandwiches? Legoshi!
She describes him as like a dull wolf or a dumb wolf or something.
And in the world, predators still need protein, but they can't have meat because it's not like you really want to eat your next door neighbor.
Or
meat supplements are used, and eggs are considered acceptable for predators to get their protein. Now, here's the parallel. In real life, the manga changed from Wednesday to Friday due to its popularity. But in the universe, due to the popularity of Legum's eggs, they were provided on Fridays versus Wednesdays. Because Legoshi in the story is like, oh, I usually get my eggs on Wednesdays, but they don't taste right. Legum has an internal breakdown, thinking, are my eggs losing their quality? Does someone not like my work? Because when they changed the schedule, they didn't tell Paru at all. She actually opened up the shoujin manga, all right, and then she's like, where's the chapter? What was all my work? And then it wasn't until Friday she learned, oh no, we just moved it to Friday because it got more popular. And then of course, Lego in the universe is like, oh, they still love my eggs. Which just goes to show you how much she put in her real life experiences into this manga. when it goes to peace complex, like Yellow talked about, she would take real life situations in Japan and convert them to an animal parallel and allegory. And that's what made this story so unique. And what Patrick led to can be interpreted multiple different ways. I actually read this entire interpretation where one person was saying this was very sad because it shows that, oh, a woman's only value is her ability to produce something. But then another person's like, no, it actually shows how much, even if one may not look at the work as considered high, like say an engineer, one can still take value in their work, such as working as a server, and still be productive and appreciate what they do. There are so many different interpretations of this because many people hold, oh, Legum really loves her job because she cares about what she does. That's how I interpreted when I read it before I read this entire backstory. But having that back and forth of how people interpret it was just phenomenal to me. Oh, and now we're going to go to the characters. Let's see, who's going to be talking about Goshen?
I think that's Patrick.
Oh, yeah.
That's me.
Yes, that's you! Actually, wait. Gil, you did this during the last panel. Do we have any other... did have that one slide where we talked about how much we love B-Stars. I would love to hear your take on that.
Sure.
You mind coming up?
Did you guys expect anything? Did you see that? Was that
I knew it! Yes, you did.
Okay.
Hi, guys. There's a chair over here. I'm going to get down here. Stand up. So, were we talking about why we love B-Stars?
Yes.
I love B-Stars because it paid my rent. No. I love B-Stars because it's, to expand on that, gave me the ability to follow my dream. For a while, I wanted to be a professional voice actor. I had a bunch of different pivots to different, I was going to be a chef. I was going to be a game developer. I was going to be on Broadway. I was going to do a bunch of stuff. But I didn't know what to do with my life, so I moved to Los Angeles to try and maybe do voiceover, maybe. I don't know. And then a director threw me a bone. I got cast as the lead in this show, and I was terrified because I knew that there was a huge fandom behind it. And I'm like, I cannot screw this up, because if I do, I will not hear the end of it. Lo and behold, everybody loved it. I don't know how many of you guys or anybody up here have even watched the English dub, but, okay. That's honestly a lot more than I thought.
I don't like subs.
It's the first thing that's on when you hit Netflix. It's like, there it is, okay, cool. A lot more people liked it than I expected. Because it was my first role, I didn't have a metric for like, This is what I, as an actor, I had a metric for like, this is what I think is good, right? But as an anime dub actor, the metrics are different. So I didn't know if anime fans would enjoy it. I didn't know if furries would enjoy it. I know they like the show, so I just had to put in an effort. But I really did try and, for lack of a better term, act my ass off. And I am so glad that landed because of that, people wanted to come to something that I've done for 7 to 8 years at this point, and that's streaming. I've been a Twitch streamer for almost 10 years, and that never kind of it was a thing that I did as a hobby. It was like maybe 10 people that would come to watch, but for the first time, I had over 1,000 people watching me play video games and do stupid I wear maid dresses. I do stupid stuff on screen, you guys come and watch and you have a great time, but. That is very important for me because I was broke, flat, like actor sleeping on the floor, broke, like can of beans over a fireplace, broke. And that gave me the ability to stay in LA. I had 1 month of runway, and I was like, okay, I'm either gonna have to move home, or I'm going to, have to go on the street or live in my car or something that I didn't have. And just because I booked this role and was able to facilitate a bunch of other things, I was able to live in LA for another month, and then another month, and then those months became, you know, 4 months of runway, and then that became 5 months of runway. And now I'm at a point where I'm not worrying where my next meal is coming from, and that is why B-Stars is important to me, and that is why you guys are very important to me. And it's not just because you pay my rent. It's because you support me in ways that you guys don't even, like, doesn't register on your level, but, like, it's massive support for me. Even watching the show is huge. Netflix looks at those numbers. They do. And whether or not there's a high amount of people watching determines whether something is going to get canceled or not. And you guys made sure there was a season three. You guys made sure there was a bunch of fun things, like cologne that I should wear, you know? All kinds of really fun stuff that I got to try and show off on my stream, and you know, I don't get paid to do any of that. Potter doesn't send me a check. I don't get residuals from the anime. In fact, I lost money recording B-Stars, actually. I didn't have a car at the time. So the studio where they recorded B-Stars was in Santa Monica, and that's about an hour's drive from where I live in the valley.
What?
And I took an hour Lyft ride to the studio to what? Get to, for my session, which I got paid about $130 for. So I lost about half of that in a Lyft ride to and from the studio. So, like, it's not, it's because I wanted to follow a dream. It's not for the money. But that's why I love B-Stars. And thank you guys for letting me crash your panel. I was back there, I'm like, we put so much love into this. I don't know if I can, like, interrupt this, because this is so good. But I'll stay up here for out of plate. They just make sure that everything goes well, if anybody has any questions or whatever. But I'll stay up here for you guys and hang out until you're done.
Oh, thank you.
Joe, that I just want to say, been a fan since Attack on Space.
Hell yeah! That's a deep cut, my friend.
I did think your voice was absolutely perfect for Legoshi. I did binge watch the English dub, because I'm a dub person, not a sub person. I loved it. We are going to talk about the anime later.
Okay.
And we're not going to talk about you. And wait, one last question.
Yeah.
Did you read the manga before you did the voice?
Oh, okay.
I was a huge fan of the manga and the anime before I did it. So when I got the audition, I auditioned for Bill, Legoshi, Louis, Pina, you know, a bunch of other people. I loved it. I was a huge fan. I'm a big now weeb, so why else would you be an anime voice actor? Also, shout out to Jax in the back. He's the one that gave me his cosplay to come and spec out.
Believe me, I'm so excited that you're here. I'm trying not to, like, bang as myself, so bear with me. So now we're going to talk about actual Legoshi, which I did give...
Patrick.
Yep, I gave it to you.
Oh.
Let's try to remember the practice slides for this, because really, let's just talk about the fan translation error that I still... So many people, like, still mention it, which honestly...
Oh.
I should start calling him Legoshi or Legoshi, but I read the manga like way before the anime came out, and all the fan translations were just like Legoshi, and I just never changed it for some reason.
Someone who's bad at translation has always threw me off, but I'm always going to call it Legoshi. It will always be Legoshi to me, because I read the American translation, which was messed up, or they did not correctly translated, but he'll always be Legoshi to me.
He's named after Bela Lugosi, which, again, how that translates, what I think is, I watched Gurren Lagann, and the character's name is Simone, but they pronounce it Shimon, so I assume that's why it's like Legoshi. Yeah, that's what I assume, because maybe the C isn't as, like, easily pronounced in Japanese, so, yeah. In the end, correctly, could be either one.
Yes.
as a casual student of Japanese, the thing is, he's named after a character that sound doesn't exist in the language, so it's kind of like
Oh.
All
right.
It really is a chicken and egg thing, because this the S-I sound, it just doesn't exist in Japanese. It's just she, so.
Just really quickly, we'll answer some questions at the end.
Sorry. Oh, yeah, just because we want to make sure we hit time, so don't worry.
Continue with the ghost. Let's go with that. We just went through all that. There we go.
Oh,
yeah, he said this from The Big Dumb. That's actually a quote from.
I love
the video I made. Oh, man. That was the best way I could just, like, describe some of the actions of this character. He does the right thing, but sometimes the weirdest possible way. And that's why I love this character.
Am I trusting in drag?
No spoilers, sir! But yes, I actually picked this for the manga because it's the best example of The Big Dumb, where he's trying to help a person dance, but just the way his mannerisms is, the character Juno's like, oh my gosh, is he flirting with me? And the ghost is just completely oblivious. Oh, yes. I'm just saying this now. It's not a spoiler. He has the coolest grandpa in all of anime. No spoilers. I will fight anyone for this. I love his grandpa. I'm not spoiling anything. I love that character.
Even cooler than Goku's grandpa?
He's a sweet boy. He got a potato. And of course he loves rabbits. Oh, and then we got to do that. I'm not sure if you've seen these. Oh, and now we got Lewis.
So, we actually had to change, we actually had something different instead of Angry Lewis, but I had to say Angry Lewis is best Lewis. Only because, one, his expressions are so perfect to his actual character deep down to what he was developed into from the actual creator himself. Clayton, Angry Lewis is best Lewis, like I said. He's named after that actual bag that's in the corner that we have, as you can see.
Do you remember the price I told you of how much that bag is?
If I remember correctly, the bag was around, like, 6,078?
Oh, God. 4,000.
4,000, okay. I was off by a couple of digits. It was cheaper than a car. But to clean that, Louis is also named after a lot of things that we have also have listened in history, mostly from French. And between it, Poirot was going to kill off Louis in Volume 2, and honestly, I'm happy she really did it. And Quinette, you can actually see it being done in, one, the manga, and two, the anime when it was being done. Because you actually see his background that he was supposed to be doing something, and I'm happy that it was never done in general. One, he has a wonderful tier development between his character from when you see him all from the actual manga itself from the beginning to the end, including the actual anime itself. You see his character develop in every single step of the way from when he started to where he ended up now. Including that, we put that in twice.
I put it in twice because that's super important.
No, that's three.
Oh, I put it in three times. Oh, we did put it in three times. So, yeah, we're going to make it very apparent by three times that Angry Lewis
is
best Lewis.
Yes, just want to emphasize that for those that haven't read the manga. You just have to. Examples.
So, me and Patrick are going to do this together. A little bit. So, this is also really important for Fantech. So, like my wonderful two other colleagues over here were talking about, is that there is a fan text error, and this is usually very important, because you have to remember that most text is coming from either overseas, either to us, or to them, by any means, by across the pond. And because of that, a lot of translation is usually done by actual professionals, or by people just taking their time to learn the language, either the Israeli, their second language, or they're bilingualists. But you have to remember that a lot of things do not translate into another language correctly. It is not the same way. There's the best example is between Korean, Chinese, and I forgot one other, but they actually have very similar characteristics when they name things, but they do mean separate things. Like, one word can mean the same two things for one word in both languages, but the third one could be very different. It could be ice cream instead of ambulance. Now, this is a perfect example between anything else, because you have Lewis here, being best boy angry, And you see him, he says, "Hey, Lewis, I need a pardon." Now, that would be a completely different thing from the original text itself. Because it's not going to be the same way, because it should have been read as something else. And I find it, and the best example too is from all the Netflix. If you watch a lot of Netflix anime, which is including itself in the dub version, because I read, because I did both sub and dub, including watching a lot of anime, is that there's always a lot of mistake titles, including within the dub version, when you listen to it in English and watching the dubs, the subtitles at the same time. And I hate it so much.
Now, about that anime.
Oh, the anime.
Oh, yes, I'm starting. So, with the anime, as someone who has loved the manga so much, I'm tempted to say one of those lines where the manga is better. I'm not saying that, because I'm accepting that the anime is different. There are specific reasons that anime is different, because it only fits so many scenes into one episode. I will say this, Lego is in the anime, and that makes season one amazing. Just wanted to throw that out there. I also want to just shout out to Jonah Scott. You did an excellent voice actor for Lego. She just wanted to say that. And for someone who has read the manga, it's very easy for me to see the nuances and the differences with them. I'm not going to pick them out because I'm trying to keep it spoiler-free. Believe me, I can go on and on and on. You can go on and on and on. You can go on and on. Yeah, we got it. Oh, you do? Okay.
About this slide.
All right, you know what? Sure.
Fine. So, what's it called? We usually like four seasonal anime. It's around 12 to 13 episodes. It's really popular. It's 24, but it's very rare, almost. Well, kind of. I mean, there's a lot out there, but Beastar Season 2 was only 12 episodes, and some people, like, got mad at how some things were rushed, especially the ending, and so I saw a bunch of, like, weird Twitter rants being like, oh my god, I will not acknowledge that Beastar anime existed. They literally deleted their Netflix account. Okay. It reminds me of the post that when Attack on Titan manga ended, people were saying, this is the worst manga of all time because I did not like the ending. How can you hate it? You voice Willy Tiber.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Oh, one last thing before I hand it to Yellow, because it's Yellow's any more unique in his perspective because he saw the anime first. As someone who reads the manga, I do have manga bias. I'm sorry. But I do respect what it's doing. All I'm saying is, where's Grandpa? That was always thinking about during season two. He better be in season three. I didn't answer that character I love way too much. Once, if you watched it or if you read the manga, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So now to get a completely different perspective.
So, from someone who actually only watches anime half the time for all the nuances that may happen in it, you actually, if you've never read the manga itself, it's very easy to see when the story gets cut in very certain scenes of the whole anime itself, just within one actual episode that only is going to last about 32 minutes long, or around 25 minutes. Hence, the ending credits of OP and AP. I mean, EP and OP. Now, it's very easy to see the nuances when they're being cut, including that they did, I would say, a good job with the first season than anything else. But when it came to season two, you can see everything being done in its own respective way because it's hard to fit over 100 chapters into just 12 episodes within only a 25-minute span of a story. And I will say that the anime was good. It was really well done to their perspective, but again, I just don't like how some things were just being cut in some perspectives. And that's the sad way that how anime works. Again, if it's popular, it'll continue to watch at least 24 episodes to the best ability, but again, that's also the production team of the people who are animating them, because some of those animators get changed out very quickly, season by season alone. And you will see the difference in the actual creation, time release, and anything else that can go with it. So, again, I give it big bucks for Netflix for pulling this off for what they did, even though it took way too long for the seasons.
We can say so much, but just go through time. If we have time, we can definitely talk more about this. Oh, I'm going to give this one to Justin, because say if you do like Beastars and want to learn more, we did highlight three specific YouTubers that you can actually invest in and take a look at.
So, three famous YouTubers that we know of, Beastars, fame, I guess,
yep.
is Kamui Miracle, who focuses on analysts of the plot characters and the events in the series. We have Sonic Hot XD, who is a YouTuber I personally grew up with due to his YouTube boobs, so I know a little bit more, but he's recently gotten back into his content thanks to his Beastars works. And CookBoss88, who is a creative methods of exploring the Beastars universe through character tech messages, memes, etc.
All right. So I do have my references. This does conclude what we wanted to discuss. How much time do you have, by the way?
I got time.
Oh! So we do want to open the floor as to just questions about Why We Love Beastars. If anyone has read it and wants to share or are just vaguely interested and just want to know more. Can we actually ask? Can we have the room longer?
No, I'm saying if.
I don't know. Can we speak longer? Because we can. Believe me, we can.
Quarter. Let's just do 5 minutes.
All right.
We're only gonna
have 5 minutes. Okay.
Okay, Google. Set timer for 5 minutes.
No.
Why?
No, you turn mine off too.
It's not the magic conch, you know. I'll turn on mine too.
All right, we got 5 minutes, folks. All right, who wants to start? All right, you.
Not a question, but you kind of remind me of John Carmack, and you also kind of sound like that.
You do kind of sound like that.
Yeah, you look just like him.
You look
John
like
Carmack is the guy who programmed Doom, worked at id Software.
Oh!
Worked at Gearbox.
Holy crap, you do.
Doom Fame.
Actually,
wait, you do.
I'm going to be honest.
You kind of sound like Ben Biscuit.
Even though I haven't played Doom, I did get Doom 64, and I ended up starting to play Quake.
Hey.
So we're getting there. We're getting there. All right, who's next?
I had a question. It's not really, like, weird or not. Oh, I was going to ask, can you do
I can't hear you.
Can you do the voice, please?
Okay.
Can you do the
voice, I was going to say do the OOXE one, but you couldn't finish it.
Or anything.
I know. I'm not going to ask you to do that, but just do a pop.
I need to witness it a moment, please.
Hello, my name is Legacy B Stars. Here at Philadelphia to... what am I doing here?
The
best part is it's literally just... if I was, like, super stoned. sometimes he gets a little more animated, you know, but a lot of the time, he's just right here. That's pretty much it. I can just talk like this all day, except when he's fighting stuff. I think it's a little bit feral. A lot of growling, a lot of barking, a lot of gnashing of teeth. I mean, you got a phone book?
I just actually have a question for you. Of the information we shared, was there anything that you did not know?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Like what?
I didn't know that... I didn't know a lot of the facts about Pagu.
Okay.
I knew they were... I knew they had a partial. I knew that they were like engaged in fandom, but I didn't know that they like participated to that extent. I didn't know. Did you? Let me tell. Maybe you, I'll tell you something about the anime you don't know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if you don't know this.
Well, let's see.
Maybe the audience. They filmed the entire anime in a black box theater.
I knew that.
Okay, you knew this. They filmed the whole anime, and this is another reason why the dub could never be as good as the sub. No matter how much time we got, no matter how much, well, maybe if we got $2 million, I could make it work. But they filmed the entire thing in a black box theater, then they motion captured it, and then they animated over the motion capture. So what you're getting is the real physical reactions from all of the actual actors, right? It's just like filming a motion capture, like TV show or a video game or anything like that. And because of that, we're an anime dub. We get about $100,000. Right? So we don't have the money to rent out a black box in LA. We don't have the money to, you know, dub all that. We don't have the money to get the raws. What we did was incredible for what we had. It was physically impossible for us to do what they did. And I feel like that's a lot of people don't give the dub enough credit for that, because we have to try and make it as close to that as humanly possible,
with none of the support. So I feel like we bridged quite a big gap with the dub. But that was maybe a small fact that maybe you guys didn't know. I don't know if you guys knew that or not. But yeah. Also, Griffin and I blocked out scenes. Griffin, who plays Louie, he came over to my apartment, and we rehearsed. We rehearsed based on translations, but we wanted to get the emotional through line across the entire scene. Nobody does that in dubs. You're crazy if you do that in dubs. We're crazy. Yeah, he came over and we blocked out five, ten scenes, and we rehearsed it several times. It was pretty good. So when I came in, I knew exactly how he was going to read things. I knew how that was going to go. I didn't have him in my headphones because I recorded first. But anyway, that's a fun fact.
I'm glad I was informative and you did learn something.
Oh,
I was afraid you were just going to know everything.
No, you guys are great.
All right, who else has questions? You in the back.
This one's for Jonah.
You're good.
Without spoiling anything,
sure.
Since I'm still reading the manga, what part of season 3 are you most looking forward to doing?
Grandpa.
Voicing?
I'm looking forward to Grandpa.
You are?
Oh, yeah.
Grandpa.
I guess she needs a paternal figure, I think, so. And Goheen's kind of a dick.
Yeah. So, our timer went off. First off,
Wait, I just want to say, literally, with Grandpa, they literally just made one of my roommates at my college apartment a character. And so it's very funny. They're here right now, and they know I'm talking about them.
All right, I just want to thank everyone for coming. This is a series that I passionately care about. And the way it concluded, there are some things, but I felt it was very wholesome. It definitely drew me in. I just wanted to share with everyone my love for Beastars. I read this throughout the pandemic. It was definitely something that helped me through that, which not a lot of people can say, but I just want to thank everyone here for even coming to this panel. I truly appreciate all of you. Thank you.
Actually, I want to give a big more shout out for Jonathan Cummingar.
Yeah!
I tweeted about it like 15 minutes before I came in, by the way. So
you did?
Oh, yeah. I was back there chilling for like 20 minutes.
Because actually, when we did this panel before, we were texting telling the story. 2/3 of the room was filled. It was 7:15, and everybody was screaming for us to start because they're like, it's supposed to start at 7:15. And when I looked at the schedule, it said clearly 7:30.
Yeah.
So they're like, okay, we're just going to start at 7:15. Then 7:30 hit. I saw people at the door. I waved to them. Oh, you can come in. It was standing room only. But the room was much smaller. I'll give that credit. It was way smaller, but we filled up. It was packed.
That's amazing.
So we ended up doing this before. And once again, hopefully this panel expressed to all of you just how much all of us on here, care so much about this series and how it brings people together.
So, ladies and gentlemen, at this time, our panel has now been completed. I'm sorry to say, we are over our time, but have a good night.
That's all.
All right, thank you. All right.
Oh, yes, you want a picture of everybody? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, do you
want?
We want you in the
picture. I'm the only staff member.
Don't say all that.